Gray Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Gray Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. It is Friday, July 9th, 2004, 10:04 on the Central Coast of California. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name's Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind, the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on Geek Speak, we're taking your calls all day. Well, all hour, that is. You can call up about technical problems with your computers or questions in general about physics, chemistry, science, technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or you can go to geekspeak.org, click on the geeks, and then click on send a message. Fill out that form, we'll get it in our email inbox, and we'll respond to you on air, if time permits. And of course, the phone numbers always work, and we can hear your beautiful voice again. The 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, and I'll give that information out again when I invite your participation in about 15 minutes. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks: Miles Elam, programmer and student of American Literature; John Tracy, owner and operator of FeltonGames.com; and the beautiful Sean Cleveland, technical marketing communications manager for Transmeta. Gentlemen, geeks, nerds, welcome to Geek Speak.
Good morning.
Good morning. Morning.
Wow, I'm flattered.
Before we start, I'm not beautiful.
No, it's redundant. we're gonna take calls in just moments from now. But first, let's get a little. Yeah, Miles, of course you're beautiful. Come on.
Trolling for compliments.
Yeah, we'll have to play the other Devo song, Beautiful World.
Let's talk about the news quickly, shall we?
Yes, well, the green light has been given to the Microsoft antitrust deal in the state of California. So U.S. judges have given final approval to the $1.1 billion settlement reached between California and Microsoft over their antitrust activities. So what does this mean to you? Well, if you purchased Microsoft software between the years 1999 and January of 2003, and which was a month before it was due to go to court, you could be eligible for vouchers. And these vouchers are hefty. We're talking $16 for Microsoft Windows or MS-DOS software, $29 for Microsoft Office, $5 for Word, Home Essentials or Work Suite, and $26 for Excel.
So I could spend the hour or so it would take to find the receipts and everything and get like $20.
Pretty much.
And the voucher.
And those are vouchers that you can use to buy other software.
Microsoft software?
And from their competitors.
From their competitors.
But that would be everyone. So that's just software in general.
That certainly sounds like they're not really specific. I'll buy some Linux. Oh, that's free. So, it should be interesting. If you want to learn more, go to MicrosoftCalSettlement.com.
Thank you very much. Miles?
Well, in a change of fate, there are no new Internet Explorer exploits this week. You know, praise be to God.
Wow.
However, and in fact, Microsoft released a fix for the most recent exploit, and people should go to Windows Update, except for the fact that the fix actually doesn't fix everything. So
the exploit's still valuable?
Right. So you can do I encourage people to do the update, but you're still not completely safe. But just so people don't feel left out, if you run Mozilla or Firefox on Windows XP or Windows 2000, there's an exploit on that as well. That one is a shell exploit. Rather, in the URL, when you put in http://FTP:// apparently, if Mozilla or Firefox doesn't understand a protocol handler, that's what they're called, to it, it'll just pass it off to Windows. And one of those protocols that passes off to Windows that will get executed is shell, S-H-E-L-L. So it could execute an arbitrary program or look at a file list on your local system. I don't know if it's so much that someone could pull the data off, but they can remotely execute a program mm-hmm. in your system. One thing that was, I was trying it out going, I don't know if this is the case. And I clicked on the link and suddenly I had, you know, 20 Firefox windows opening in about 5 seconds and was in a mad dash to get rid of them. Otherwise, it would have sucked up all the memory and crashed my system. But crashing meaning I reboot and everything's okay. But, mm-hmm. yeah.
All right, so the vulnerability now, in general, be careful when you're in a web server. Visit sites you know and don't...
Right. The bug has been fixed in Mozilla Firefox, but unless you get a nightly build, you'll have to wait until the next release mm-hmm. for that to come through.
Well, Miles, thank you for that update. John?
Last month, Burton, Spaceship One, Burton owns a company called Scale Composites down in the Mojave Desert. They launched Spaceship One successfully. Spaceship One is one of the spaceships going for the X Prize, the $10 million prize, the first ship that can carry three people into space, land, and then repeat the feat within 2 weeks. Last week, they had their first successful test flight into space. So it's brought to light some of the older plans that have been around. And the fellow named Bob Bigelow has come up with this idea. Actually, he came up with the idea like 5-10 years ago. But nobody really paid him much attention because there wasn't any infrastructure to support it. His idea is inflatable space hotels. It sounds like a wild off-the-cuff thing, but he has actually built several working prototypes. He's scheduled to launch the first one of these in 16 months via rocket to have a destination for these emerging new breed of spaceships to get to.
What about the does it handle radiation problems?
It handles radiation problems. It doesn't go into the specifics of it. A lot of it's kept under lock and key, you know, industrial espionage being what it is. But it did say that he will be eventually offering overnight stays at the hotel, including the flight up, for $50,000 to $100,000 per night. So anyone who's ever wanted to go spend the night in microgravity and return to Earth safely, your chance is coming.
Very cool.
It's been a slow week.
Sean?
Yeah, General Electric has announced a nanotube that is the size of 10 atoms. It's 10 atoms wide. So that's big news because, as you know, current processor technology is at 0.09 microns. A nano is 1/1,000,000th of a meter. So this is, we're talking 10 times smaller than our current technology, I think. Or is that 100? Yeah, it's pretty small. Anyway, what this could mean is smaller computer chip technologies in the future.
If people can use nanotubes for computing, which theoretically they can, but no one's done it yet.
No one's done it yet. The problem's been trying to make the actual tube itself, mm-hmm. to construct that so that it works every time. So they've done it, and I guess it is. It can hold, or can...
Transfer
a charge. So, should be interesting. And IBM is also working on nanotube technology as well.
Thank you, Sean. Miles?
Today, Wikipedia has, or rather a couple of days ago, Wikipedia had 300,000 articles.
What's Wikipedia?
Wikipedia is an online encyclopedia. It's made basically by the internet at large. Anyone who says, oh, I know a little bit about this topic, let me put an article up there, and someone else will say, oh, well, you actually messed that up a little bit, and they go in and make fixes to it. But basically, it's larger than any encyclopedia that's bound.
Is there any information that's actually valuable on it?
In fact, it will mirror much of what you'll find in a normal encyclopedia, but you also get things like, what are the effects of being crushed by an elephant, for example.
And someone firsthand wrote that, or?
Or did the research and followed the medical cases for it, but yeah.
So this is like an anecdotal encyclopedia? Instead of a dry definition, you get an
anecdote. No. It actually is fairly dry in most cases.
They
try to be fairly, they try to have some rigor to it. Of course, with that many articles, you're going to have some sway, but at the same time, if people look at it and say, hey, that's wrong, they can always go back and fix that. And you get basically a set of articles or an article. You'll have one or more people who take ownership of it. That basically say, I'm in charge of that. So if people come in with a critique, they'll incorporate that.
And that's Wikipedia, W-I-K-I-P-E-D-I-A.
Right.
.com?
.org. Shoot.
We'll check that URL. And while we're checking that URL, John, your next story for the day.
I have a little bit more space news. I'm going to roll it all into one. Cassini has taken some pictures of Titan's surface, which is significant in that
How?
Using infrared mapping spectrometer.
Okay.
It reveals what's on the surface. And they found a lot of materials they weren't expecting to find. This is significant in that this is the last unmapped surface in the solar system. This is the last significant unmapped surface that's been hidden behind clouds that we've had left to map. So that's it. We know everything about the solar system. We can go out deeper into the universe now.
There's a lot more to do, but yeah.
Meanwhile, on Mars, the rovers are both behaving very well. One of the Opportunity is performing well inside the Endurance crater, where it's been for the last week or so. It's been able to traverse much steeper slopes than they thought, due to the lower gravity, due to better traction environment. So it's doing well. And Spirit also is performing better than expected. So they're still moving ahead with the plans. They're still up and kicking, and they're still moving ahead with the plans to put them into a deep hibernation over the Martian winter, which is coming
up.
And see if they can bring them back up.
Pretty exciting. Thank you, John. Sean, I'm going to go to you for your last news item for the day.
Actually, Wikipedia is .com, .net, and .org. Any of them.
And can you spell it again?
WIKIPEDIA. And a good online dictionary is hyperdictionary.com for those people who are interested.
I'm going to go ahead and invite people to give a ring in now. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. And, Sean, do you have an item for us, news item?
Yeah, well, the broadband market is set to triple by 2008. So if you people out there think that you don't have any yet, you will soon enough, because they're really pushing this, both cable and DSL. The competition seems to be growing fiercer from what various analysts have found. So expect North American cable access to grow from 34 million to about 75 million in 2008. And satellite is expected to also grow. So it should be interesting to see.
Thank you very much, Sean.
I'm sorry. The Libmators jumping in again. Fiercer? Come on, you're more literate than that. It's more fierce.
Thank you, Miles.
All right, I'm gonna find
a
piece of coal underneath my pillow tonight.
Miles,
Amazon has received a new patent on software
because they didn't have enough.
Right, that this software, or it's a process for obtaining a routing and checking account number from information entered by a user from the face of a check.
What?
Yeah.
Say that again, a bit slower.
Okay. Apparently, it is a novel and interesting thing that requires
the
patent
definition
protection.
Of a patent, right? Patent.
The process of obtaining a routing and checking account number from information entered by a user from the face of a check.
But
that's a process.
That's
now?
Like that's what the information on the check is a routing and
exactly
account
and
number.
I still think of all the little machines where you stick the check in there and it slides through
and it reads it and checks it.
So they just got a patent on that.
I'm surprised no one had patented it. Is that specifically using the internet doing that, or
it's on basically online on a online e-commerce site?
That's just bad form. Okay.
No, but the patent office doesn't need reform or anything.
No, not at all.
I need more resources.
Not for KOSP. You think that that's a ridiculous patent? The patent office rethink their.
I don't get it. Amazon didn't create this.
Not at all. I mean, the bank system defined it as they made checks. And that's how
it works. In fairness, this is the process of reading that information. Yeah. In fairness to the patent office, this isn't necessarily because they're doing something malicious. They're actually heavily underfunded and understaffed.
Right. But. Thank you, Miles, for that, John. No.
Okay. It's like I said.
All right, John, you've got an assignment. Go to wikipedia.org and look up geek and give us a definition in a minute. We're waiting for calls from all callers from you. Give us a ring, 476-2800 and the 831 area code, or 1-800-655-5877. While we're waiting for those beautiful calls to come in, Sean?
Yeah, Fujitsu has a really cool technique that they've developed for embedding data invisibly in printed pictures. So you've heard of this before with digital pictures.
Yeah.
They can do it with printed pictures now. So the technology, which is called steganography, basically it's altering an image in a way that cannot be perceived by the human eye. So what they've done is they could so far put in a 12-digit number in a 1-centimeter square. So you could plant an URL or a phone number into a business card or magazine advertisement. To extract the information, you would point your camera, possibly your phone camera, or your PDA at an image, and it would be able to detect the information.
Wow.
So let's say you were walking in front of a billboard of a movie poster. You could actually say, you know, I'd like to see the website for this, possibly. So you could point your PDA at it, and it would just, you know, send you right to that website.
Nifty.
So kind of interesting technology. I guess they're going to be Intel's Intel Developer Show this last year. They kind of showed some of this, and expect to see it more of it in the future.
From Santa Cruz, we have Jim. Jim, welcome to Geek Speak.
Thank you very much.
What is your question for the day?
I've got a Windows XP machine. It's a Toshiba laptop. And I think about 3 or 4 months ago, I decided to get some updates, security updates or something from Microsoft.
Uh-huh.
And during the process of the updates, one of the things it asked me was, here's some files that we think you don't need. You can probably delete them, but be careful if you do. I deleted them, and now what happens every time I run Microsoft Word, not all operations, but sometimes if I want to print or if I want to save, it wants to reinstall something with the program. I can cancel out of those windows, and it still works correctly, but it's really a pain in the butt to keep having to fight those dialogues coming up all the time.
Do you have your Windows CDs? Your Office CD, rather?
No, unfortunately, I don't. It was a computer that was mine at a startup company, and when the company went under, that was one of the things that we got for compensation instead mm-hmm. of pay was a laptop. So, mm-hmm. fortunately, I don't have any of those disks. Otherwise, I'd just reinstall them.
And you got this information that you can delete some files from the Windows update site, or you got it from an email, or?
No, I think it was during the update process. Is when those dialog boxes came up. And
see, that's really strange. Office, I mean, Microsoft shouldn't be doing that with its own software. If it thinks it should delete it, it'll either delete it or not delete it. And if it thinks it should delete it, then it's not going to affect anything that you have installed. I find that very, I have an issue with that. I think that possibly you were duped to some degree.
Well, it's possible. I've seen things where it was saying this file probably isn't being used.
Yeah, but that's normally an uninstalls.
Yeah.
Not an update.
This was from the Windows Update Microsoft.com main update page.
Yes.
Because they have an Office update section at the very top. There's a menu where you can actually update your Office.
I would do that. I'd go up there and update your Office.
But you need your original disks to do that update.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of.
Do you know who the person at the company was that that get the software disks?
Oh, gosh. It's too much of a drama to even get involved with
and
that
you don't have another copy somewhere? Because
no.
It probably won't ask for your serial number again, so you could theoretically just borrow the disk from a friend because the serial number is already registered,
right,
if you will,
right,
for that software.
Right, that's a good idea.
So just borrow the same Office version from somebody you know.
Okay.
And tell them that, you know, you're not cheating or stealing or anything. You just need to make sure that all the files, all the DLLs and stuff are actually with your system. And after you do that, you should be set, but I think it's a little strange that it happened in the first place.
Yeah, I was real surprised because the nature of the question it was asking didn't sound like there would be any harm.
Right.
But
right.
Then when it was all over and I rebooted the machine and tried to run Word, then the problem came up.
Even if you take those disks and initiate an install, since you already have it installed, it'll ask you if you want to uninstall it or repair the installation.
And repair.
You want to do a repair and then go up and get those updates.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Great. Thank you.
From Pacific Grove, Gene, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello?
Hello. Yes, you're on GeekSpeak.
Okay, great. I've got a question, and I also have a comment it occurred to me I'd like to make. But anyway, the question is...
Why don't you make the comment first?
The comment is, it's about Dell computers.
Okay.
They ain't as fantastic as they used to be, if they ever were. Well, I assume they were. I got a computer with ME, and my, the modem went out shortly after I got it. And I got great service from Dell. They actually sent a person out. He made sure it was the modem and slapped one in and... I was off and running. My ex just bought a Dell with XP. Same thing. Modem went out, but they had that famous worm going a month ago or so, and she couldn't get into customer service. No way, no how.
Mm-hmm.
And it was outsourced, whatever. So she had to go out and buy a modem for herself or have a tech come in and look at it, and sure enough, it was the modem, and they replaced it. So I think they're sending out defective modems in their computers.
All right. And your question?
Question is, I've got an old Windows 95 computer, the whole system, with an old slow modem in it, and a printer and a monitor, and I want to donate it or give it away or whatever, but I want to make the hard drive go away.
You don't want to have your data given to the people
right.
you give it to?
So I know, I guess, if I went format C, I guess everything would be gone, so they wouldn't even get Windows 95.
That's right. Do you have the Windows 95 disks?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah, the way I would do it is pretty much what you just said, just format C and then install your disk.
But that's not good enough. I've pulled data off drives that have been formatted.
You've got to make sure you zero all data. Isn't that an option when
you're formatting? Yeah, that's one of the options when you format is to zero the data.
Can you remember the DOS command to do that?
The what?
I'm asking the geeks here in the house if he remembers the DOS command to do that.
I don't. You might want to put it in with
a format that will definitely destroy the data, Miles. Got any ideas?
Well, you can also choose that feature during a defragmentation. So if you took the hard drive and put it in as a second hard drive, and from Windows, formatted the drive, and then did a fragment and zero all.
That would do it.
Mm-hmm. You'd have to have two disks.
You could also reformat it several times, might help. But I've heard the professionals can pull data off drives that have been reformatted many times.
I don't have a whole lot of
The formatting process will not wipe out your data.
I don't think they're going to find a whole lot of stuff that is going to bother me if they find it, though.
You know, what I would do is...
And it's
cough a little bit.
And it's since, a school, so they're not going to be hiring a professional then.
Since you're doing this, since you're downloading this machine, and it's not like it's top secret data or anything like that,
yeah.
I would just format the drive, install 95, and give it to them. I mean, yeah, theoretically, they search through. They could probably find some images that were on there before and other data that's on there. But probably no one's going to do that. And if they do, it doesn't matter that much to you. That's
the thing is, running for president.
If you are installing on top of that old formatted information, mm-hmm. whatever that new data is sitting on top of, uh-huh. it's gone.
Yeah. Once you install 95 on top of that, it's going to be pretty hard to pull the data.
Okay.
I would go ahead and do that. The other thing you can do if you really want, fill up the rest of the drive with some files and then erase them all. And you can do that a lot of ways, but one way to do that, if you have two computers networked together or something, just put a whole bunch of files on top of it that you don't care people could read, and then erase them. And then those are the only thing that people be able to get off of. But in general, I wouldn't worry about it too much.
Okay, great.
Thank you very much, Gene.
And I like to comment on the Dell.
you don't like Dell either?
No, I didn't say that.
Okay.
So Dell was having problems. Well, everybody knows they're having problems with customer support. They took their big business support and brought it back into the United States. That has helped. But it's the medium and small businesses now that have been complaining. So Dell has announced that they're opening a call center in Oklahoma City and hiring 250 salespeople from around that area to man the phones. So I don't know.
So they are changing.
They are changing. They're listening, but I don't know how that's going to affect consumers. You might be sent overseas for support.
In Santa Cruz, Joseph, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, thank you guys for having me on the air. I'm a PC user, been so since about 1995. My girlfriend always has a Apple or Mac, mm-hmm. and I have nothing but problems with viruses and all kinds of stuff all the time. Always putting on checkers and spyware type things.
On your 95 machine?
Yeah, mm-hmm. and even I upgraded to a 2000 Sony IBM PC that with the latest. I don't know, everything's on there, but I still have problems with it. So she says if I get a Mac, I wouldn't have any problems like this, and I want to upgrade one more time. Should I go to a Mac?
Well, it's
true that PC?
Right now there's three Macs here in this air room. Mm-hmm. Two of us have been using Macs since inception, and the only virus I've ever had was a Word microvirus.
Right.
And that's the only viruses that actually spread, and they don't spread anymore really because Office is pretty good about stopping those.
There was the Apache worm as well, but
there's a worm that could, but I never got it.
But that was on the server side. You actually had to enable it.
Basically, there's no viruses on Macs to speak of at this point.
I use two machines at home. I use a notebook and a machine at work,
uh-huh. and they're all Windows.
Heavily, and they're all Windows XP.
But you have virus protection.
I never get viruses.
You've got a virus.
You have virus protection, right?
I do.
You also had a virus once.
Do you have to run AdAware and things like that every time you go into the?
SpyBot. AdAware are two very good applications. In fact, you might want to consider running both of them because they have their strengths and weaknesses.
Anytime I go on the internet, it seems I have to run AdAware or any of these type of things to clean my computer from.
But you don't need to worry so much if you use another web browser and email client.
Okay.
So, for instance, I do not use Outlook.
All right.
And I do not use Internet Explorer.
I use Outlook and Earthlink as my providers.
Okay, so here's the deal. Yes, you can go with a Mac, and you don't really have to worry about viruses very much anymore. But eventually, the virus will probably hit the Mac, and it'll probably hit it pretty hard.
All right.
But for now, no, there's nothing going on.
Good.
And there are virus protection software for Macs to just be even more safe. Secondly, you could just stick with Windows, get the most recent Windows.
Yep.
Make sure you always go to Windows Update.
Okay.
Make sure you get the two software packages that Sean was just talking about.
Right.
Don't use Internet Explorer. You download a Mozilla web browser called Firefox, which is at mozilla.org. And don't use Outlook. You go ahead and use, like, Eudora. Or you go ahead and use, again, Mozilla's email reader, which is called Thunderbird. And again, that's available on mozilla.org. You do those things. You also get a virus protection software on a Windows machine.
Yep.
And then it'll act more like a safer environment.
Very good. Appreciate the information.
All right.
Keep up. Thanks.
Thanks. And Mark from Corlitas, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. Long-time listener, and sorry to be a little redundant with the last caller. I'm actually in Cambria. Listen down here on your translator.
Oh, sorry. Yes, I see that.
But I'm a longtime Mac guy and a little bit of a bottom feeder in the computer industry because I'm in a nonprofit. And I've recently been given some P3 PCs. You know, both two desktops and a laptop. And so it's hard to. Just, you know, throw that stuff away, given that Apple stuff is much more expensive. And I'm a 98 second edition user, and I want to know if, it, you know, if I stick with that platform, am I going to be, screwed in the near future with reference to software, that only really operates with XP. So, you know, my question basically is, if I do upgrade to XP, am I going to... have to just, you know, it's time or money. You know, it's like how many times do you have to, you know, download the updates and the patches and all that, you know, whereas with Mac, you just don't have to spend all that maintenance time.
Yeah. Well, it's a hard one because, I mean, if you're diligent, you don't really have that many problems, but being diligent takes some time. That's true. And, I mean, from my understanding at this point, I work up at UCSC.
Yeah.
And the division that I work in, which is the arts division, runs completely on Macs. And a lot of the other divisions on campus run on Windows.
Yeah.
And when worms and viruses hit, the people that run the Windows departments are swamped with problems.
Yeah.
And the Macintosh people sit there and go, bummer.
Yeah.
And when cost analysis is applied to it from a large organization standpoint, Apple's argument is apples are cheaper by far because of the less tech support you have to do.
Yeah.
If you're already a Mac user, I would stick with it. If you're already a Windows user and you're relatively happy, I would stick with it. And just at this point, you should know to some degree how to run Windows. But yeah, moving from Mac to Windows, you'll probably run into some things that you think are frustrating.
Yeah, well, I've been using 98 second edition for the last year.
Mm-hmm.
But so my question is, would it be in my, best interest to go to XP? I appreciate that, what you said to the last caller about getting away from Explorer and Outlook.
Definitely do that. If you go to XP, definitely do that.
Yeah.
It's a good operating system.
Windows 98 is not officially supportive of Microsoft anymore.
Yeah.
So there are no more updates being produced for that version.
Got it.
There are security updates, just no real product updates for it.
But it's going to slow down.
It's definitely going to slow down.
If you're going to stay with Windows, definitely go into the XP realm.
And you think that's better than 2000?
Yeah, at this point.
Yeah.
I think it's a better solution. If you can get XP Professional, not XP Home, that's a good choice.
Okay.
Windows 2000 has pretty strict hardware support in a lot of ways. I mean, it was meant more as a workstation platform. Win XP is more, it's got better support for hardware.
Okay.
For consumer-based hardware.
And I got to say, most nonprofits are in Windows environments. And the reason for that is that when it comes to getting new machines, it's cheaper to get a Windows machine.
And you get, corporate, donations from people that are...
And the volunteers that are going to come in and possibly help you
with
Windows.
Exactly.
Those are all good reasons. And most of the nonprofits I know in Santa Cruz County are using Windows machines because of all those reasons.
Yeah. But the time... and that's the difficulty is, when you do get hit with a virus or even the scare of a virus, you don't have an IT professional, in the office. So, and then you're bugging your friends, or board members. Hey, can you come over after work? And it's like, the guy's already tired,
In fact, if you're listening right now if you know Windows real well and you want to help out with a small nonprofit in your area, contact a nonprofit and say, you know, I know Windows and I like it so much, so I'll come in and help you out. What's your nonprofit?
It's a retreat. We live in Cambria, and we have a retreat house here for, you know, tired professionals, generally in, it's faith-based. So it's, you know, Christians and Buddhists and anybody who needs a retreat but can't afford it. So there's a lot of people who, you know, work in the inner city, you know, working with homeless, and, you know, they just can't afford a vacation.
Right.
So
well, I hope that somebody out there that knows your organization comes up and helps you out on your machines. It's definitely good help. Thank you very much, Mark, for the call from Cambria. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing internet services including DSL, spam filters, PHP, MySQL, now with nationwide access. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301.
This week on This American Life, stories of people starting from scratch. One man leaves his job in late middle age to pursue a new business venture involving Ted Turner, Barry Diller, and puppies. Lots of puppies. Another man starts from scratch every morning with change in his pocket and hustles it into thousands of dollars by nightfall. Plus, Adam and Eve. Yes, they're naked, but you can't see that over the radio. That's This American Life, Sunday at 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
This is Central Coast Public Radio, KSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. The Geeks this morning, the delicious Miles Elam, as you just heard, Sean Cleveland and John Tracy. We're taking your calls. The phone numbers to get involved, 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. The Federal Communications Commission is hosting a hearing on July 21st to take public testimony on how new FCC rules affect Americans. The Media Alliance presents a series of workshops to prepare for the hearing. On Monday, July 12th from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Monterey Library Community Room, and on Wednesday, July 14th at 7 p.m. at Loudon Nelson Center in Santa Cruz. For information, call 236-7406. Grey Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Grey Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. We're taking your calls. The geeks are here standing by. We can take calls about your computer problems, dilemmas, or questions about space, technology, sci-fi, you name it, we got it.
Ask us about digital cameras, what to buy, because two of the geeks have just recently bought digital cameras. Three.
I mean, we'll get into that anyway, because it's, you know, this is a cool subject.
And it's Santa Cruz.
The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. All over the Central Coast of California. You can also go to the geekspeak.org website, visit the geeks, and then click on send a message to get into our email queue. We're going to go right to Susan in my town of Felton. Susan, welcome to Geekspeak.
Hello.
Hi. Yes, what's your question?
My question is I'm operating off a computer I purchased in 97, Windows 98, a 166 processor, and it's starting to crash every day. And so it's probably time to upgrade. And my question is having to do with, I have a lot of software that I purchased, you know, to run on that and then installed upgrades. A lot of those upgrades require that you already have the software installed. Like my QuickBooks, the upgrade isn't a new version of QuickBooks, but it's an upgrade to an existing. In order to do the upgrade, you already had to have it on the system.
Right.
Can I take my, I guess it would have been QuickBooks 97 or whatever that was, and put it on a new machine? Do you know? One example.
But you don't have the install disk for the first QuickBooks?
Yeah, I do. I have all the original disks.
Okay.
I just wonder, because it's such old software, whether or not a new system, I can put old software on a new system.
You typically can install that software again on a new system. There are a few cases where there's issues because they ask you actually to register the copy before you actually enable it. Photoshop CS is like that, and the new Office suite is like that. But other than that, most applications, once you own it, you can go and install it on multiple machines illegally. But if you remove it from the first machine and install it on the second machine, you're pretty much following every rule with software installations. You know, you're being legal and moral and all that. If you install it on a second machine and you don't erase it from the primary, there's still potential for you to be doing a completely legal and viable thing, because those two machines are the same person using the software, and the license is for a person using it. I would go ahead and take the disks and install on a new machine, and you're off and running. The only question is whether it's compatible with the operating system.
That's what I was concerned with.
Okay. Your current operating system is what, 95?
98.
And you want to go to XP?
I'm not sure. Okay. I have a laptop that runs on ME,
mm-hmm.
But that doesn't work for my business. So
right. No, you shouldn't have a problem running it on Windows. Anything on Windows 98, you should be able to run on Windows XP. It's pretty much backwards compatible.
Oh, okay.
And you won't probably have a problem installing that software on any Windows operating system, except for maybe Windows NT, for example. But that's kind of an older than 98. It's about the same age. But no, you should be set.
Okay. Then the second question is, I have the Norton package that I upgrade online. Would I have to purchase that again, or would Norton?
That one's kind of an issue. It'd almost be worth purchasing it again because of the hassle you'll have in trying to not purchase it.
Oh.
But potentially, when you bought it, they gave you some information. If you have that information, you should be able to use that information again. They probably gave you a serial number, if you will.
Yes.
If you have that serial number, then you should be able to download and install the most recent version using that serial number. You might have to pay for an upgrade in the sense that the most current version they're going to give you won't be the same version that you purchased.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about it. You could still use an upgrade because you're just installing it again, and it's the same person doing it.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks, Susan.
Bye.
Bye-bye. If you'd like to be like Susan and get on the line with us, the phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We're going to go right now to Dave in Watsonville. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello?
Hello, Dave, yes.
Am I like Susan?
Yeah, well, similar.
Oh,
but
good.
You did it before her.
Good.
Deeper voice, too.
I'm a longtime Mac user, and I've been dragged kicking and screaming into using OS X now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure I'm bonding with it really, really well, or maybe I need to learn more about it. But
my grandfather's having the same experience. Like, things are so different at this point.
I mean, why change all that stuff? But, I mean, it does seem more stable and all that wonderful stuff. And
the application development, like the other applications out there that are being created for the Mac,
mm-hmm.
with OS X just soared. So that's
right.
A big reason right there. There's a lot of technical reasons why to go to OS X from a representing operating system perspective. But, yeah, the user interface is very different.
And my main question is how the file hierarchy, how do I save a file the way I used to? Or it all wants to end up just as under my favorites or under...
Under your documents?
Under my documents. You can't save it. I seemingly can't save it to the actual destination folder that I want it to go to. It only goes into kind of larger,
right.
coarser areas.
Yeah, well...
To be sorted later, kind
yeah.
of.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming that since you came from 90... since you came from earlier versions of the operating system, you have, like, folders in your hard drive that are called certain things?
No, I know.
Right.
I know what's going on. You're talking about when you've got the Save dialog box open, it says Save As, and then Where?
Right.
And it's got a pull-down list?
Correct.
Right next to the Save As, where you can type in the
mm-hmm.
title, there's a little arrow there that you can click.
Mm-hmm.
If you click that, it expands that window, and then suddenly you have the rest of your hard drive available to you, and you can save it anywhere you want in there.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
So I got the pull-down list, and there should be a little arrow
to the right of
it. No, right next to the... It says Save As, and then there's the name where that's where you type in the name.
You mean the little arrow that changes from horizontal to vertical
that's
direction?
Right.
Yeah. Oh, but still it doesn't get down to the little folders.
You just keep on clicking,
it
should.
Clicking, and they should all be there.
Oh, yeah, they're all there.
Hmm.
You might have to go to, like... you should be... What version of the OS are you running?
Right now, 10.2.
Okay, Jaguar.
Yeah.
You might want to upgrade. But
I have two going. I have two different computers, and one is the...
Most recent.
The most recent. It's 10.3.
The trick is to make sure that you check that little box as down, and it then should remember folders for that application.
When it kind of defaults, it remembers where you would normally like it to go.
That's right.
Yeah.
The only issue is if you're running Windows 90. If you're running classic mode applications, then it gets kind of complicated.
I try to avoid that. I just kind of restart under my old system and do that. I kind of go back and forth. But
basically, over time, you'll get used to the way that they've now organized it. The most recent operating system release, 10.3,
mm-hmm.
Has a kind of cool thing where the favorites and all the hard drives and stuff are kind of listed on the left-hand side.
Right.
So you can click your hard drive, and it starts your three-column view that way. I personally like that a lot better than
and
what
you,
Jaguar
And you can drag any folder you want over there. And
once you have that that whole thing open. I do like the way that works. Seeing things expand to the right.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Keep trugging through, I think, is the answer.
Can I ask one more question?
Please, Dave. Go ahead.
I'm doing some CAD work on Vectorworks. Are you familiar with Vectorworks?
No, but keep going.
It's a CAD program, like architectural CAD.
Sure.
And I was hoping to find a used plotter to do large format printing output. And the local print bureaus like Blueprint Express want you to install a driver like for the HP 750C, which is a large format printer.
Mm-hmm.
And that just kind of is a generic driver that works with theirs.
Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering if that happened to be a good printer to buy.
Which one?
I see the HP 750.
Unfortunately, I don't know much about it.
You don't know those?
About large plot printers, no.
No, and you want to purchase one?
I'd like to purchase one. I see them on eBay. They're around $1,500 or something.
I would make sure that you can run it with OS X.
Yeah. From looking at the dialogues on the Internet, it looks like there's many issues that they can be solved by diligence, but I'd kind of like to start out with one that was already solved.
That's actually a good question. Where would you guys go to research something like that?
Well, I'd go over to the print department at UCSC because I'm there.
Oh.
And talk to the guy that knows about printers and Macs.
I was trying to some online resources. I used to go to a place called epinions.com.
Epinions.
Yeah, it's like opinions but with an E in front. And it's just people rating different things and giving their, this is why I like it, this is why I don't.
Right.
I don't know if they would cover large plot printers. It just depends on if anyone's bought them up there.
Right.
Do you guys have any other place you go to research when you're looking for new things?
I don't. I just use Google and just start researching.
Yeah. That's kind of what I've done. I think I just kept at that for a while. I'd be able to find
when buying new equipment, I look at PriceWatch and PriceGrabber.com.
PriceGrabber.
That's for prices, of course. Mm-hmm. You can also just put the
but not necessarily. You can direct. It'll come up with the cheapest place to find this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you don't have to sort it that way.
In Google, I would simply put the HP 750 Mac OS X.
Mm-hmm. And people who are already dealing with 10. That issue will come
and then,
up.
Boom. And then if you want to add, like, see a preview or a review, then also write the word review, and you'll probably find any reviews that people have made.
Okay.
That's the way I would go about it.
All right.
Thank you very much, Dave.
Thank you.
Question. And from Seaside, Amber, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you. I have a question about Acrobat Reader 4.0. It's on my machine, and occasionally I go to a site where they offer PDF forms, and I want to insert my own text and then, you know, print the completed form. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if does Acrobat Reader 4.0 offer that capability? And if so, how do I access it?
There's two answers to that. First off, most people write PDFs that are kind of for print, and you fill it out via print. You can, if you have the full version of Adobe, open those files and edit them via text. With Reader, you cannot do that. Secondly, people can format their PDF documents to have kind of form fields in there. And if they do that, then opening it in Reader will allow you to type in there, only the places they defined.
I see.
Most sites only support the first version, which is for print. And the only way to edit that would be to use the whole suite of Adobe. And then it would be problematic to edit it.
Okay. My next question is, I was fortunate enough to go to a seminar offered by Microsoft, and they had some door prizes, and among them was Microsoft Office Professional Edition 2003, which I won.
Okay.
Now, I haven't installed it on my machine yet. If I can just go back a minute. My sound is out, and I have to get that fixed.
Okay.
I just wonder if I should just take care of the sound before I install this Professional Edition 2003.
No, it doesn't really matter. The sound is possibly going to be a sound card. That has to be replaced.
Excuse me?
The sound is probably a bad sound card or a misconfigured sound card.
When you say misconfigured, could you maybe give me an idea of how I could go in and see if it is misconfigured?
Was sound running at one point on that computer?
Pardon me?
Was your sound working at one point on your computer?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay, well, there's two things. One is that the speaker simply got unplugged, which is a very common thing.
Uh-huh.
Or the speakers, and then maybe we're plugged into the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. Normally, sound cards have a few plugs.
Okay.
The green one, if one's colored green, that's where you want your speakers or your headphones to go into.
Yeah.
Sometimes they have little symbols of headphones next to that jack.
Uh-huh.
We'll make sure that's plugged in. You also want to make sure that the operating system thinks that it should be turned up. And the way to do that in Windows is to go into Control Panels, and there's one that's called Sounds, I think. Mm-hmm. And just double-click that, and it should give you a little interface on the volume levels and stuff.
Right.
When you move that volume slider up and down, it should make a dong every time you select a new sound level.
Okay.
If you can't hear that, then pretty much the operating system thinks everything's working fine, and yet it's not working, which means it's probably hardware.
Okay.
But that's my suggestion. And go ahead and install Office. You can use it without sound. It won't have any problems in that regard. And then when you ever do get your sound working, having Office installed is not going to slow down or hinder or make it a problem any worse.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much for the call.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Amber. And from Los Gatos, Tim, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi.
Hi.
I had a virus and a worm on my computer probably about 2 months ago. I fixed that. The problem is it seems to have taken some JPEGs with it.
Have you been using your machine since then?
I'm using XP.
Have you been using it currently, like a lot, since you lost those images?
No. Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, use it every day.
Okay. Well, it's possible those images are still on the hard drive somewhere, and you could do a search to find them. You would have to get a recovery software to get them. But
okay. What happens is when I go into my pictures folder and click on the folder that has the pictures in it, half will be there, half won't. The picture will be there with the title, you know, and the number on it, and there'll be like a big question mark.
Right.
Yeah. So JPEG cannot. Yeah, cannot be found or da 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 da.
Yeah, what happened was the virus actually, the worm actually removed the image data and replaced itself with a virus. When you did the virus upcheck, it found all those viruses and removed all the viruses. So now you just have these files that are basically empty.
Okay.
And now basically those images are lost. Now there's a potential that they're on the hard drive still, kind of like we were talking earlier about formatting hard drives. The data is not really removed.
Okay.
But to get them, you'd have to use a recovery tool that can search for JPEGs.
Okay.
And as you use your computer more, you're writing and reading from the disk, you're going to overwrite those files.
Okay.
And you'll start losing them. So if you really want those images, I would go ahead and get a software of image recovery tool. Sean, do you have a suggestion to one that would work?
I use SpinWrite to recover data. There's several different pieces of software out there. I don't know specifically for recovering images.
Yeah.
Okay.
SpinWrite might be.
SpinWrite, you know, it's probably not the right software, actually.
You can also, of course, go to a recovery space and send them the hard drive and see if they can get images back. But I, at this point, would probably just let go of them unless they're the only copy and they're really important to me.
Ah, okay. Great.
Well, thank you very much, Tim.
Thank you. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
We've got Jason who emailed us. The Mozilla shell security issue that we were talking about a little bit earlier, he says that Mozilla Project has already provided a fix for the Windows Mozilla shell URL security problem. You can get that fix at www.mozilla.org/security/shell.html.
Okay. And that's just a patch to make sure it's safer.
Right.
It doesn't actually install the entire thing. So if you do have Mozilla, make sure you go there. Again, the URL is mozilla.org/security/shell.html. And if you just went to Mozilla/security, you'd probably get the URL as well.
And in addition to that, while you should still get that fix, Windows XP Service Pack 2 will actually close that hole as well.
Of course, that's not available yet.
Right.
All right.
Thank you, Jason, for that.
And from Santa Cruz, Richard, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, certainly.
Let's see, I've been using my system with the same setup for a couple years now. It has Windows 2000 running on it. And let me see. So I've had a lot of different software installed and uninstalled and various things that have accumulated on it. I went through and I was sort of cleaning up the system. I think I deleted something that I probably shouldn't have because now when I log on, I get a message saying that there was an exception that occurred when it's trying to run a DLL file.
Okay.
So it's made the performance kind of flaky. Basically, like some of the executables that automatically load, it says that they don't load, and it's shown up when I tried to run things like Adobe. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Here's one way I've fixed this problem before, and it's kind of the geeky way to do it.
Uh-huh.
Take a note on what error you're getting, and there's the DLL name, whatever that is.
Okay.
When you find that DLL, go ahead and find somebody else you know that has the same operating system version than yours as yours, and see if they will send you a copy of that DLL, and then put it where they said they found it. Because what happened is you deleted this file that's needed, and someone else probably has that file on their computer. And when they do a search for that file name, they'll find it probably in their Windows system, 32, or Windows system, or Windows.
Right.
And once they find that, just tell them to tell you what the path is for that file and to send you a copy of that file.
Yeah.
And then you just put it in the same place and restart your machine and see if you don't get that error.
Great.
That's one way to fix it. The other way is to go ahead and put your Windows CDs back in and do a repair, and it'll probably find out that that's a missing file, and it will put it in there for you.
Okay, so there is a way to do it, a repair using the original disk without having to reinstall the whole thing?
Yes, assuming that the Windows... What version of Windows are you using?
2000.
Yeah, you should be able to do it with that. But it's possible this DLL is not Windows-related. It might be a proliferating application that runs at startup. Sean, you had a point about this?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were getting
previous caller.
Okay. So that's the way I'd go for it. Just try to find that DLL on somebody else's machine and put that in there. And if not, go ahead and do it install from your... you basically run like an install from your Windows disk.
Yeah.
But when it gets through there, instead of saying install clean, there should be a repair option.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much for the
call.
Thank
you very much.
Yeah, Sean?
Yeah, I was just chatting with Gordon Ung from Maximum PC Magazine.
Uh-huh.
He's a friend of mine. I thought perhaps on-track data recovery would be good. He says that a lot of that stuff doesn't work very well.
We're talking about for image recovery on a hard drive.
It's for image recovery for hard drive, specifically, PCs. But SpinWrite, I should have stuck with my gut instinct.
Okay.
SpinWrite 5 is out and 6 is coming out. It's supposedly pretty good. So you go to SpinWrite, SPINRITE .com. Get more information about that.
Ark from Aptos, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Morning. You guys are busy this morning.
We are.
Yeah. Hey, on the topic of protecting yourself from viruses and not using Internet Explorer, I'm a longtime Mozilla user, and I'm interested in your take on this. There's an online virus scanner from Trend Micro called HouseCall. Are you guys familiar with that at all?
No.
Basically, you can go to their website and choose personal, and it has a current virus definition file and things like that. But it wants to install a plugin.
Right.
And I was working on a friend of mine's machine, and I'm trying to wean her off of using Internet Explorer.
But this will only work in Internet Explorer, right?
But when I try to install it, exactly, I can't get it to work with Mozilla. And it's really funny because it interprets Mozilla as a Netscape browser, which I can understand because they're based on the same code, if I'm not mistaken. And it says, well, okay, I can't find your plugin directory. Tell me where it is. And you go and you browse and you find the directory where the plugins are, and you say, okay, this is it. And it says, nope, don't find a plugins directory there.
Yeah. What's happening is their install application for this plugin or the plugin is not understanding the protocol. Most likely they're doing something very specific that's for Internet Explorer.
Well, this sounds like an install issue, not necessarily an actual program execution issue. That sounds like the program is looking for Netscape.exe and then a plugins directory underneath that point. So
I would go ahead and put the choose, when it says choose plugin directory, try a directory above that.
That's what I've been doing. Yeah. I mean, I've tried just about every combination I can think of. This, it's one of the unfortunate things about trying to get away from Explorer is that you run into JavaScript incompatibilities and things where you can't.
I would try to contact this company and see if there's any comments about it. Also do a Google search for it. Like, what's the site again?
It's trendmicro.com. They're pretty big antivirus and other security company.
Uh-huh. Well, then go ahead and do a Trend Micro and then do Mozilla as the search string in Google and see if some other people have a solution for you.
Okay.
They might actually provide another version that definitely works with Mozilla.
Yeah, they distinguish between installing on IE or Netscape.
Right.
But
the old Netscape, probably.
Yeah, probably.
All right, thank you very much, Mark. Good luck.
Thanks, guys.
And we're going to take our last call from Bob in Santa Cruz. Welcome, Bob, to GeekSpeak.
Hi. I have a compact Presario, almost 3 years old now.
Uh-huh.
And I'm kind of in a dilemma. It needs to be gone through. It has, I guess, bugs probably from online, and it's crashing a lot and doing all that. But I keep hearing conflicting opinions from different repair places. For example, they say that Windows Millennium
Edition,
is almost obsolete or had so many problems. And then I also hear people say that the compacts are junk. So I'm just kind of like teetering on, is it worth it to repair this thing?
Meaning, what do you mean when you say repair it? You mean install a new operating system on it?
Well, possibly, but just go through and clean it up because it runs really slow and has crashes a lot and, it has...
It comes down to, is it worth your time? You'll be happy with a brand new computer. It'll work great for you for 3 years, right? or you could go ahead and spend the time to work on this machine. One thing you want to do is you're going to get more RAM for it, and you're going to want to do a clean install on the operating system, which means you've got to deal with your data and managing that. So some time and commitment.
But if you get a new computer, you're going to deal with all your data anyway, getting it over a new computer.
Mm-hmm. Well, the data isn't that much problem, and I already did buy RAM for it.
I don't have a clean solution for you. I'm sorry. I would go with what you feel makes sense to you.
Well, the best thing I've heard so far is from Wolf Computer. They sound really good.
I personally like Wolf, yeah.
Yeah, he sounded like he didn't give me any indications of that the compact wasn't worth it or that...
No, it's probably worth it. You'll probably be happy with the machine
if it's a three-year-old machine and hardware-wise it's still working, keep it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much for the call, Bob. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computers and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. The Geeks Today, Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and John Tracy. Geeks, thank you very much for being on Geek Speak with me.
You're welcome.
Always good to be here.
Yep. Our producer is Maggie Cleveland, and to all of you listening and calling in, thank you very much for making Geek Speak what it is. Without you, it would just be us geeking out. And who really wants to listen to that? Fine Print is coming up next with Rick Kleffel, followed by State of the Arts with my mother, Diana Wright Troxel. And at noon, Two Steps on the Blues with Charlie Lang. For KOSP and Geek Speak, I'm Lyle Troxel. Stay tuned now for Fine Print.